I think it was a Buddhist or somebody said, after the man does the business of his life and he brings up his children and does his duties, he prepares himself for his death. And I said, I want to prepare myself for my death. And no, I'm at that time.
Do you think there's something you need to do?
I think there, yeah. I want to maybe just give everything. I do something. I want to let go.
Well, you know, years, not too many years ago, I worked as a volunteer at hospice.
Yeah.
For 6 years.
I don't know how you did that.
Well, it was, the funny thing is it was easy as could be because it was so affirmative in a way. And
Affirmative of
life, oddly enough, you know, and of the notion that you could do things beyond what you think you could do. One of the things that I sort of realized was that there's not this line, and on this side of it you're alive, and on this side of it you're whatever that is.
But gone.
The people cross back and forth over it, sometimes for a long time. Sometimes
really?
For, you know, days and weeks and months, and suddenly they're back and present, and that's...
You mean, although they're alive, their mind wanders back and forth? Well, I feel more and more that I'm completely gone. Gone in the sense that I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore. I have absolutely no idea. And the more I know about the universe and the kabillions and trillions of stars, I become so diminished, I'm not even an amoeba. I mean, I just, you know, and that whole nature of time, you know, I always talk about this is now and this isn't now. That's always been there from 50 years ago. I always do this piece about the minute I say now, it's not now. See, it's not now. This is actually, no, this isn't, because this is, no, this isn't. And then the minute you say it's now, it's not now, and when I was born now. When I die, I'm going to die now. But there's never been any now. It's been one moment called now, and the minute you say it's now, it's not there. And that's so fundamental.
Yeah.
I hear this talking. I don't know where it's coming from anymore. Mm-hmm. See, this is my 1932 Duane suit. They're recalling this year. You could get spare parts. But no, it really is.
Yeah.
And here's a plant alive.
Mm-hmm.
Here's me alive. Here's me dead. The energy, it's just so obvious, the energy. Watch now in springtime, it's going to be, everything's going to be throbbing with that energy pressing out. This tree behind the house, the birch, I think it's sending out those little shoots already, those little things that hang down. We're in the midst of this vibrancy. It's just a mystery. It's just overwhelming. You can only surrender to it. It's just, you'll be crushed by it. It's just so... It's so huge.
Do you have any impulse to make work out of that, or?
Well, I've always done variations of it, but it's always been in everything. Spirit leaves the body, you know.
I'm trying to find that film, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
the one that
shot
down my wall.
Yeah, with your leg. That was you getting up.
That was me. I've got a great story. I don't think I've ever told you this, but we did that, and I had no trouble being filmed. Naked, because, you know, you couldn't really see it was me.
Yeah.
So...
Well, let me explain.
Yeah.
I did a sequence very early in the first book called The Spirit Leaves the Body, because I think that's what happens. You walk away from the debris. And so it's a guy laying in bed. I double-exposed him getting up.
Yeah,
and then he walks into the camera, but the body remains always there. But the one thing, I was talking to somebody about that, and I said, the one thing I should have done was, as the body walks away, in the still picture, was that he looks back at his body left behind, energy. And then somebody said, well, you did that in the movie with you. And you did turn. I saw the movie recently, and you do turn around and look at the body.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you must have, I wouldn't just do that. So
No, it's directed, yeah.
It's
hard to get him out of bed. He falls asleep just like that.
When it was shown at the New York Film Festival, three or four months later? And so I called my then-girlfriend, Karen, who's now my wife, and I said, they're showing this movie, come see it. So we go in, we're sitting in the darkened theater, and then the sequence comes on, and a voice from about four rows behind, a woman's voice said, that's Sean Kernan.
Oh, you're kidding. Are you serious? How do you get out of that? And then another woman said, that's Sean Kernan. And then, another one,
the
woman up
place.
Front. Sean, you fucker! So anyway, this spiritual arena is still there. And I wish somehow in the next number of years that I have some kind of a breakthrough. I can't make it happen. I can just present myself to let it happen.
Well, the basic instruction of Dzogchen, which is this Tibetan thing, is leave everything as it is. Don't go looking for experiences. Yeah. Don't just this.
Yeah.
This is enlightenment.
Yeah.
Being confused is enlightenment.
Yeah, But we just don't. We don't see it. We're so intense. Everything seems outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said no, I feel like I'm the event. That's significant. And right now we're sharing like Rashomon.
Yeah.
We're sharing the same event. But it's also, I think the other thing, what you put in your head is what you get. You have to be very careful how you program yourself. And it's all mine. I think it's all mine.
Yeah.
It's totally mine. This is mine. Everything's mine. You know, learning how to surrender is the hardest thing, though. This is just one aspect of the event. Oh, there's a wonderful quote from, what's his name? Buckminster Fuller. He said, I seem to be a verb.
Yeah.
And I've been reading a lot about physics and the nature of literal construction of the universe. And the idea that it's a particle, we're all particles of energy. And then another book says that we're an event. And I love that. And I see myself as an event in the vibrations of the various levels of consciousness and atoms. We're literally a verb. And I'm doing a new book on poetry. Not poetry, about portraiture. I'm talking about trying to figure out who is being photographed, what is a portrait. You know, is it not, it's not just the description of the face, you know, which is what we take. Years ago I wrote that the geography of my face was changing as I got old, and all the lines that had once been streams are now becoming rivers. And the face, like a glacier, keeps moving very slowly back to eventually surrendering to the earth as the whole body is pulled downward. So it's, and I've been very lucky because I could talk about anything if I have the wherewithal to put it together, if I can focus and figure it out.
Is this a book that you are writing?
It's photographs.
And you're writing it?
Yeah. I have figured out, there are, for me, four kinds of portraits. The essential portrait is called stand and stare. That's what everybody does, stand and stare. And it came out of early pictures where the film was so slow, they had to clamp your head and that's all you could do. And so we grew up with the tradition of people, just standing and staring, an assumption being that your face speaks for you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not at all true. Two eyes, a nose, and an ear, that's what the face is. And that has become the recording of record, and it works very, very well. So then I have another kind, which I call the prose portrait. And the prose portrait is telling a story about the person. So that all of my Magritte pictures were prose portraits. They were done in the vernacular, in the manner of Magritte-ism. And then when I did my self-portrait looking in a book and it says, I think about thinking, the Times had asked five or six photographers in the magazine section to do a self-portrait. And what's important about me is not my face. What's important is I think about thinking. My mind is what's important about me. So people keep relating to the face. I did a little sequence portrait with Michael Richard, who plays Kramer, and he did shtick, which is, you could photograph his face, but he is shtick.
Yeah.
It's his comedic body language so it's telling a story about, that's why I call it a prose portrait. And then I have another portrait, which I call the annotated portrait, where I will, under the photograph, make a comment about the person I photographed, and or some memory, or some. So it's expanding. And then the last one is the imaginary portrait of people who don't exist, like when I paint on photographs. and I take 10 types and I've been oil painting, making a face that doesn't exist in reality. So I think there are all these different flavors of portraits, not just this, you know, I am not my face, you know.
Can't get it.
Okay.
That's okay.
The one of the first assignment I give to a class is I tell them to go to a public place, find somebody you're interested in, look at them for a while, take out a piece of paper and write a short biography of that person.
Interesting.
And they said, you mean talk to them? No,
biography.
And they do it in their imaginations and they come up with these incredible stories are truer in their own way.
But you know what's good about that? I keep thinking people should stop looking, photographers. They look too much. They have to start thinking and feeling and finding that the source of the work, not looking for some curiosity on the street or some.
Yeah.
And what you've been doing is terrific because it forces them to stretch. And I always tell them that, listen, if you want to, I often get the question, how do you go from a thought to making an idea and making it visible? So I said, you have to write down on a piece of paper a secret. And you write down, for example, something you've never told anybody, something you're too embarrassed to say out loud, something that is so private you dare not even permit yourself to indulge yourself in it. And so if I would do it, I would write on a piece of paper one sentence. You'd start with one sentence. And I would say that I did not love my father. Wow. Man, how could you say that? Ooh, how could you think it? So I would write that piece of paper. It's my big secret. And I'd put it somewhere nobody would ever look, like under my underwear, my underwear drawer. You know? And then maybe 6 months later, 1 month, or I don't know, I take it out and then write a second sentence. My second step, walking on the world, and I'd say, and I don't think he loved me. Oh my, you know. My big secret is on a piece of paper. I could burn the paper, I could write a third sentence. But it's a process of freeing yourself first to yourself. Once you have the courage to say it to yourself out loud, again, nobody's business but your own, then maybe you'll have the courage to, maybe third, and then maybe you have the courage to walk around the world, you know. But I mean, you have to start with some one sentence, you know.
Last summer I gave an assignment to my portrait class. I said, take a picture of yourself that no one will ever see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody did it. I suspect they didn't do it.
No, but that's that's a great idea. It's the same principle. But you have to unlock your own energy. You have to unlock. People are always looking, photographers are looking at other people's lives, something they know nothing about. Which, when I did that book, House I Once Called Home, was very liberating for me. I got into absolutely everything. I had gone back to Pittsburgh to photograph Larry Kramer, and I took my assistant, and I said, let's go back and see to McKaysport to see my old house. And we had sold it 25 years, and I had just turned 70, and I was born in that house. Well, the house had been abandoned for I don't know how long, and the whole town has pretty much been abandoned. And then when I went into the room where I was born, it was like 2 weeks before, it had been 70 years ago, I felt I'd come complete circle. And there was that touching moment of coming complete circle. And then I had to, and being in the very room where I was born, it was wonderful. It was really wonderful and very touching. So I went back and I came back 2 weeks later, and I re-photographed all the pictures I had taken in that house when I was 50 years ago, when I was much younger, and family events, recreating the same spot, everything exactly the same. And then I double exposed, so you would see the room today, and then the transitional room where the people began to appear like ghosts, and then you saw the room the way it was originally, before it began to fall apart. It was very, very, very touching.